Your dial is set at 660 WEAF, New York.
NBC will interrupt all its programs to bring you the latest news. America United, united for victory in the war and in the peace. The National Broadcasting Company makes its facilities available for another in a series of public forum programs designed to unite the workers, the farmers, and the employers of America with their government for the solution of the basic problems of the present and post-war future.
This is Kenneth Banghart in Washington, D.C., and today the American Federation of Labor presents as its guest Mr. Charles Fahey, Solicitor General of the United States. He will talk on racial and religious tolerance. And after he outlines the subject, it will be discussed around the table here in Washington by the America United panel, which today consists of Mr. Phil Pearl, representing the American Federation of Labor, Mr. Joyce O'Hara, representing the United States Chamber of Commerce, and Mr. Paul Sifton, representing the National Farmers Union. And now, here is Mr. Fahey.
Intolerance is condemned by the immortal words of those who established our nation. The Constitution provides, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. The very first amendment to the Constitution, adopted in 1791, reemphasizes and broadens this principle of tolerance. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Further back in our history, the Declaration of Independence condemned intolerance, stating as a self-evident truth, all men are created equal, endowed not by man or by government, but by their Creator, with the right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Here, in imperishable words, are stated the simple and profound truths of the relationship of men to one another, equality in creation, and the endowment of each, regardless of race, color, religion, position, or means, with the same basic rights. Because of circumstances, men do not in all respects resemble one another. The differences of race, color, and religion, and of character and capacity. Our forefathers were conscious of this. The equality they recognized and proclaimed was more fundamental. It rests upon the common brotherhood of men as children of God, by whom each is endowed with equality of right. No one, therefore, may in justice deprive another of his endowment. It is not granted by government, endowed by the Creator, to use the old words again, and government is their protector. Each one of us must also be their protector and shield ourselves from thoughts and deeds of intolerance. These convictions of those who encourage in suffering placed our nation on the high road to its great destiny, demonstrate that intolerance is at war with the principles of our national existence. America's outlook upon all men is controlled not by fear and inordinate pride, which are at the root of intolerance. We are guided by confident recognition that justice in an ordered society, local, national, and international, must rest upon these principles which lie at the foundation of our life in America. It is through them that we have been able to grow in that strength and freedom which are now again putting an end to the oppression and persecution due to intolerance. Intolerance was at the roots of this mad war. There is even higher authority than our own great documents of government, an authority to which those documents themselves refer. Hundreds of millions of people everywhere remember today the words which on the first Easter herald the greatest of all conquests, He is risen. This was a conquest of charity, the antithesis of intolerance. He who on Good Friday had opened wide his arms to embrace in suffering all mankind, fulfilled in the resurrection the promise of peace to all who would embrace him. This complete charity is the answer to intolerance, the enemy of mankind that never has and never will bring peace. We must not think in the abstract of these principles of our nation and the teachings of Easter. They need daily application in our habits of thought and in our conduct, because the inescapable condition of individual growth is charity, and all growth in the final analysis must be in individual men and women.
As you've just said, Mr. Fahey, intolerance is at the very root of this war. By the same token, victory in this war must be regarded as victory over the forces of hate and intolerance. But how are we going to consolidate that victory, even right here in our own country, where racial and religious discrimination are still widespread? One method is legislation such as the proposed anti-poll tax bill and the bill for a permanent fair employment practices committee. Do you think, Mr. O'Hara, that such legislation will do the trick?
Well, Phil, I have no objection to legislation, and I know sincere men differ on the question. But I'm more concerned, really, what's in the hearts and the minds of men rather than the type of statutes we have on our law books to curb and get rid of intolerance. Wherever we erect barriers on the grounds of race or religion or of occupational or professional status, we hamper the fullest expression of our economic society. And I, for one, believe firmly that intolerance is destructive and produces no wealth. I don't believe that legislation alone will do the trick.
Mr. Pearl, on that same question, the Farmers Union doesn't believe that the two methods are exclusive. They can go together. They must go together. We feel in the Farmers Union very deeply on this question of tolerance, of freedom from discrimination, equality of opportunity. We're for parity of opportunity between farm and city people and within agriculture, and for justice among nations. We are definitely for the principle of a fair employment practices committee and for the anti-poll tax bill, along with the other steps that Mr. Fahey has so plainly stated in his opening statement.
Well, Mr. Sifton, the American Federation of Labor has endorsed that legislation as well. There's another point I'd like to bring up, and that is, after the war is over, if we get more equality of opportunity, economic opportunity, more access to jobs, won't that help to eliminate discrimination and the flaring up of hate and prejudice?
We feel very strongly that the problem of achieving full employment is very basic. If we can answer that $64 question, we'll be well on the road on many other questions, such as this that we're discussing today. There's an old saying that misery loves company. You can say, on the other hand, that misery hates company, and that it tends to crawl into a hole and pull a hole in after it, and you have a breakdown and a growth of bitterness within nations and among nations. Whereas if we can achieve this full employment, which this country is capable of learning to live with abundance and like it, we can reduce this problem. I would like to ask Mr. Fay if he subscribes to the basic importance of full employment after the war.
Oh, I do, Mr. Sifton. I agree entirely. I think it will bring along with it an end of a great deal of intolerance, especially if we keep in mind what Mr. O'Hara says about what must be in the minds and hearts of people.
Well, getting back to the question of legislation, there's another problem presents itself, and that is whether legislation should be enacted at the national level or at the state level. Well, New York State, for instance, recently adopted by an almost unanimous vote an anti-discrimination bill. If other states did the same thing, it would be unnecessary for the federal government to get into that field, and the question of states' rights wouldn't be involved.
It seems to me, if I may say so, that we should have unlimited competition, free competition and well-doing in this whole field of tolerance.
Well, I subscribe to the idea that full employment will help us to get rid of intolerance. Not fully, but it'll help some. Legislation will help some. But I'd like to sound a note of caution here, sort of a warning against the extremists on both sides who have set ideas as to how they can eliminate intolerance overnight. Let me say frankly that the bigotry and impatience of the right-minded can do as much harm as good. There is always the danger that their unrestrained zeal may sharpen animosities and stimulate unrealistic demands. I'd just like to throw that in at this point in the discussion to guard us against feeling that here is something you can do in the legislative halls or through through full prosperity. I think you've got to condition men's minds and hearts to be prepared to wipe out intolerance.
Well, I agree with you, Joyce, that the entry of the extremists into this question has complicated and aggravated the problem. You get the communists on one side and the Ku Klux Klan on the other, each deliberately seeking to incite hatred and intolerance by their extreme actions and policies. But don't you think that it's the responsibility of the more sensible and more decent and more constructive forces in our country to take the ball away from the extremists and try to do something about this problem themselves?
Sure I do, Phil. I think the churches and the schools and the universities, I think they all have a place in this picture. I don't think we ought to rely entirely on the legislative function. And remember, when we talk about full employment, Germany is the classic modern example of a nation built on hate that is now collapsing about us. It had full employment, but it also had intolerance and hate.
Well, on that same point, I am sure that the farmers are classic examples of patience and tolerance in working and waiting for and being willing to go along on a democratic evolution. And on this question, too, we are thoroughly in accord on the statements that have been made by Mr. O'Hara and Mr. Pearl. I'm sure of that.
Well, Joyce, don't you think that this is a subject that might well be taken up by this labor management committee that has been set up under the new labor management code adopted just recently by the American Federation of Labor, the CIO, and the United States Chamber of Commerce?
Well, Phil, it'd be presumptuous for me to undertake to say what this new committee is going to do. But certainly, the basic idea of this new management labor charter is to promote national unity. And where economic discrimination, job discrimination, creeps into our American picture, the men on that committee, I'm certain, will make that one of their objections to eliminate.
Well, I hope it works out that way, Joyce. And the formulation of that labor management code carries out the spirit of national unity which this program, America United, has sought to promote. And we hope our discussions here have helped that process along. Which brings me to a final word. This program concludes the 13-week cycle which has been presented by the American Federation of Labor. Speaking for that organization, I want to thank the National Broadcasting Company for making it possible for us to air our views and to discuss with leaders in the agricultural and industrial fields these problems of mutual interest to all of us. Beginning next Sunday, April 8th, America United will be presented for 10 weeks by the National Grange and the American Farm Bureau Federation. These farm organizations and the Chamber of Commerce of the United States, which will take over the presentation of the program in June, can count upon the continued cooperation of the American Federation of Labor in making this series one of outstanding importance and interest to American listeners.
Thank you, Mr. Pearl and gentlemen. Today, the American Federation of Labor presented Mr. Charles Fahey, Solicitor General of the United States, Mr. Phil Pearl of the American Federation of Labor, Mr. Joyce O'Hara, representing the United States Chamber of Commerce, and Mr. Paul Sifton of the National Farmers Union in a discussion of racial and religious tolerance. During the next 10 weeks, America United will be presented alternately by the National Grange and the American Farm Bureau Federation. Next week, Mr. Fred Bailey, Washington Farm Editor, will act as moderator as the National Grange offers for discussion the subject, How Will We Eat? The America United panel will include Mr. Albert S. Goss, Master of the National Grange, and Mr. Boris Shishkin of the American Federation of Labor. This is Kenneth Banghart inviting you to join the America United panel next week at this same time.
Printed copies of today's forum can be obtained by writing to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers, Washington 18, D.C., or to the station to which you are listening. America United was presented by the American Federation of Labor as a public service feature through the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This program came to you from Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.